Let's begin.
This is the Boss.
I'm the Boss.
And the Gloss.
Check out my lip gloss. I only rock clear.
On SB Nation Radio.
And SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Here are your hosts, David Gao and Carla Dawson. I got
that. And welcome in, everybody. It is great to be sitting next to the Gloss. And I might just say, with this equinox, the sports equinox that we're experiencing
here.
How
cool is that?
That the lighting on you looks a little different. Doesn't she look different to you, Jose?
She's glowing more than usual.
She's glowing.
Equinox glow?
That's what it is, isn't it?
I'm just extra glossy today. How can you not be when all the sports are happening at one time?
This show should be for television, don't you think, Jose?
If it was only Carla, probably.
If it were only Carla.
Jose is my very best friend.
All right, as usual on Monday night, we've got all kinds of excitement. It is Monday Night Football, although not a very exciting game.
Oh, you don't think so?
Oh, dear.
Miami might get a game tonight.
No, you think this is the night for the Dolphins to get a win?
Well, let's see. The Steelers are 6-0 all time versus Fitzmagic, so no, I don't.
No Fitzmagic tonight. Yeah, Ryan Fitzpatrick starting for the Dolphins, not Josh Rosen, and then Mason Rudolph starting for the Steelers. He's coming back.
After that vicious, vicious hit a few weeks ago, so hopefully it's going to be a good night for him. Do you think it's going to take a while to warm him up? He's a guy that likes the long ball. Is he going to come out throwing, or is he going to need to dink and dunk?
Oh, I think they'd much rather dink and dunk and run the ball. And they can do that against the Dolphins.
I want to see me some Juju Smith-Schuster making some big plays tonight. That'd be exciting.
That rolls off your tongue, doesn't it?
I know. Well, he's the USC guy. I got to stick with my boys. So there we go.
Fair enough. Okay. And then we...
And what a name. Can you just say that? It's such a cool name.
There are names that you love to say.
Juju Smith-Schuster rocks. That's a great name.
You say it well. So later this hour, we're going to get a chance to visit with Dan Duquette. He's the former general manager of the Red Sox and the Expos and the Orioles. And he will have good insights, I'm sure, on the big World Series matchup between the Astros and the Nationals.
And the Expos, who are now the Nationals.
Well, that's right. And, of course, he's got insights. We'll ask him about the Red Sox naming their new president of baseball operations, Dodgers. We can go around the league with Dan Duquette. That'll be a real treat. And then Hudson Mason, the former quarterback of Georgia.
Georgia, a Bulldog.
We'll talk a little Georgia football and NCAA football more generally, as there were some big games.
Yeah, it was a great weekend.
Great weekend for college football. When we come back, we're going to break down what we should look for in the next two games here in Houston. Nationals-Astros. World Series talk when we return. SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss. On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, Boston Gloss. And later this hour, we'll get a chance to visit with Dan Duquette, former general manager of the Red Sox, Expos, and Orioles. He will know everything that's going on behind the scenes in the big World Series matchup.
It's the last week of baseball for this season.
It's hard
one
to believe.
Way or the other.
And what a weekend it was.
Oh gosh.
I mean, we broadcast out of Houston here, and to lose two at home, as the Astros did to begin the series, seemed devastating. Mm-hmm. And everyone was just begging, hoping, wishing that the Astros could win two of three and bring the series back to Houston. And yet the Astros snuck away with three straight wins.
And decisive wins, 4-1. 8-1, 7-1.
They did seem decisive in that there wasn't a lot of angst. They got the lead, they held the lead, and they never really seemed threatened.
I mean, in thinking that the Nationals lineup was held to one run, that lineup is so formidable. I mean, every time one of them comes up, I think, oh, then I look at the next one. You know, it's Soto, it's Rendon, it's Zimmerman. It is formidable. And the Astros, somehow, some way, we're able to control that.
Well, I had a lot of confidence in Zach Greinke. I felt he was due for
too.
A great outing.
I did too. That's why you pick him up. That's why they do that. The trade deadline.
That's right. I had a lot of confidence in Garrett Cole coming into that weekend. What I did not expect was the great outing from their rookie Urquidy.
Oh my goodness!
I mean, it was a special night for him.
It was a special night for him, and I loved that they left him in those five innings.
Yep.
And then out he went. Because, you know, what Urquidy was able to do, I mean, there's not a big book on him.
Nope.
He hasn't pitched that much. I mean, you know, he's young and the Nationals don't know him that well. He brought his stuff. And once you get going through the lineup a third time, that's where things, you know, he starts to get kinks in the armor. And they pulled him before anything got out of control, left him leaving on a high. So I think he's going to be available, you know, if we need him again. That's a great weapon in the Astros arsenal.
Of course, the Nationals were planning on having Scherzer available, and he had the injury, and that had to be a big setback for their team.
Yeah, definitely. You know, for the Nationals, a huge setback. You know, Ross came in. He's a great pitcher as well. But I would argue to say also, it's a setback for the Astros, a team that is, next to the Dodgers, the most reliant on high-level analytics and sabermetrics, have absolutely studied film and video for Scherzer. And had seen him game one, too, where even though the Astros lost game one 4-3 at Minute Maid, they were hitting off Scherzer from the first inning, from the get-go.
Well, and I guess they were planning on facing Scherzer up until almost just 30 minutes before the game.
Yes. So I did see an interview with Carlos Correa when they asked about how did that pitching change affect you, meaning they were probably going to say, yes, we didn't have to face Scherzer. He said, we panicked. Like, we ran in, we had 20 minutes to look at new video of a new pitcher. But he said, that's what you do. You just prepare for it. So it did catch the Astros off guard as well, but it ended up working out well for them. Where it could be tough and an advantage for the Nationals, this series goes to game 7, and Scherzer, like they expect, is going to be ready to go. Yikes.
Well, no, now the Nationals are set up with Strasburg and Scherzer for game 6
they're
or 7. Scherzer's had his cortisone shot. He's going to get all the best therapy in the world. I think they're going to work it out. I would be stunned if he's not able to pitch in game 7. To me, it makes, well, look, Strasburg and Scherzer, it'll be Verlander and Greinke, and just about anybody else. I mean, game 7, you would throw every pitcher in. I think Gerrit Cole might come back on 2 days rest and pitch an inning or two in a game 7 if necessary.
Well, I mean, they could. I mean, Verlander did that in the World Series in 2017, came back as a closer.
There is nothing like a game 7 for all hands on deck.
Wow, yeah. And Charlie Morton as well. Yeah, no, it's such a fascinating series. Yeah.
I mean, thus far, the biggest statistic to me, well, the biggest statistic between winning and losing for either team has been how they have hit when runners are in scoring position.
Right.
I mean, Astros, when they had their two losses in Houston,
left
a lot of runners on base.
Double-digit runners on base.
And you can say the same thing. The Nationals in Washington this weekend, I mean, timing of hitting is so important. I mean, you can talk about great hitters and talk about great pitchers, but when you throw the great pitch and when the great hit happens has been so essential to these outcomes.
What I saw early on, too, with the Nationals, and when I mean early on, in the wild card game against the Dodgers, against the Atlanta, is that a different person in the Nationals lineup, you know, would step up either defensively or offensively. And I was like, oh, my gosh. He's the star tonight. Then, you know, Kendricks was the star one night. And then Rendon. And then Soto. I mean, they had different people that stepped up. And while the Astros have that ability, clearly, up until this homestand for Washington, we didn't really see that with the Astros. I mean, it was really, oh, man. You know, Yordan Alvarez, a perfect example. You know, 1-for-22 in the ALDS and ALCS. And now he's come on. So now I feel like the mojo for Houston and the ability for anyone in that lineup to step up. Look at Chirinos. 2 games, 2 home runs. He's our catcher.
Right.
You know, catchers typically are not, you know, the offensive juggernaut you look for.
Sure.
So I do feel like that playing field is starting to even a little bit. The danger of the Nationals is starting to look dangerous on the Astros side as well. And speaking of danger, Gerrit Cole had a little show last night.
What are you saying? Gerrit Cole in the 7th inning is getting ready to make a pitch, and he made some friends in the stadium.
A bunch of sisters.
Well,
apparently.
So, I mean, Jose's reaction, I talked to him earlier about it. He said, how come that kind of thing happens to Gerrit Cole and not to me? Isn't that what I heard from you, Jose?
No, Jose would never say that.
You want some women to start flashing you. Be honest.
I plead the 5th.
He pleads the 5th. You know what? I give Cole a lot of credit for keeping his composure, because if some women were to come in right now and flash us in the middle of this show, it might ruffle some feathers. It would certainly turn Jose's head.
Oh, Oh my God. Poor Jose. You have now like rendered him speechless.
Yes, in that red face. He's, I mean, look.
Because he's an upstanding young man.
Well, and these women were upstanding in some form or fashion. Oh. They apparently were real lookers. I've not gone onto Instagram and trolled them.
Instagram models, yeah.
You think I need to go and find out what they really look like, where they go, how they do things?
You and Jose should do your due diligence before you start talking about it.
Well, they've drawn the attention of the whole country.
I'm not qualified to speak.
All right, well.
But I did notice Garrett Cole did not break. He did not break serve. He was kept the same face. He did. I thought it was interesting during the game. I was like, why is he stepping off the mound or calling a timeout? But he never. The face didn't change, nothing. That was impressive. Kept his game face.
It was a big moment for concentration.
Oh my goodness.
All right, when we come up next, we're going to get a chance to visit with Hudson Mason. He's the former starting quarterback for the Georgia Bulldogs. Georgia, of course, had the tough loss a couple of weeks ago, but they're still in the hunt, and we'll get insights from Hudson about Georgia and really all things SEC. And there's some interesting developments outside the SEC. Big 12.
Football was a
Big
great,
12 turned
great
upside
weekend.
Down last yeah. weekend. Really fascinating. It'll be Hudson Mason when we come back. We'll ask him if Georgia still has a shot at the Final Four when we return here on SB Nation Radio.
We're working on the near hash, driving to our left. Mason looks. He's got time. He's going to hang it up for the back corner of the end zone. It's caught. Sliding. Touchdown, Michael Bennett. Yes, sir.
Time now to get the latest from the college gridiron. With Hudson Mason, right now on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Carla, one out of four batteries are going to fail this winter. Get yours tested for free during Superstar Battery Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. If it needs to be replaced, O'Reilly has the Superstar Battery for you. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. All right, joining us now on the Progressive Insurance guest line, it's Hudson Mason. He's the former quarterback for the Georgia Bulldogs. Hudson, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Carla and David, how you doing? Good to talk to you guys.
Well, we are doing great. Would love to speak first about a little Georgia football. Obviously, at this point, a little disappointing in that loss to South Carolina. Team sits with one loss. And Jake Fromm, oh, man, there were such high expectations, but it doesn't seem like he's played quite to the level that everybody expected. How do you break down his performance?
Well, I think Jake plays in a system that doesn't necessarily allow him to put up the gaudy numbers that Jalen Hurts at Oklahoma and, you know, Joe Burrow or Tua at Alabama. You know, Georgia loves to run the football, and I think that is obviously going to be a big question mark. Especially this week against Florida in their secondary, which is really good, is can Georgia make enough plays in the passing game to just be balanced enough? You know, it's not about throwing for 300 yards and four touchdowns. That's not really Georgia's recipe for success. It's more about just in critical third down situations and in critical moments in the game when they need to throw the ball, can they? So, you know, I think the South Carolina loss was more so about the four turnovers that Jake had. And then the following week against Kentucky, they played in the pouring rain. So if you just checked out the stat box afterwards, it, you know, may be a little bit misleading. But I think Georgia is a really good team. I don't think they're a great team like Alabama and LSU right now. And obviously the passing game is a big question mark moving forward.
And Hudson, in talking about Alabama and system like Fromm with Georgia and Kirby Smart being a former coach of Alabama, I'm looking at what happened this weekend. Now, Alabama did play Arkansas, which is almost like a bye week. But Mac Jones, don't tell anyone I said that. Mac Jones stepping in for Tua. Was it either the weakness of the opponent? But Alabama hasn't had tough opponents yet other than A&M. The ability of Mac Jones that, wow, they've developed him along. He's ready to step in and do this. Or, you know, does Tua need to come back for this is what I'm trying to get at. How can Mac Jones continue? And I know LSU is in 2 weeks after a bye. What do you see happening here?
Well, don't blame Mac Jones for his, handling his business. I thought he played well. And also Alabama could roll out of bed without their teeth brushed and wax Arkansas 100 out of 100 times. That's just how much better they are. But yeah, I do think Alabama needs Tua to play to have a chance against LSU, and I think it's because for the first time in a decade, LSU is planning on scoring more than 21 points. I mean, you go back and look at since 2012, 2011, I believe I was looking at it today, not only has the Alabama-LSU rivalry been dominated by Alabama, but LSU has not been able to score points. I think the most points they've scored in over a decade in that game is 21. That's the most. In three of the games they've played, they scored 0 points. So they've just been absolutely anemic offensively and inept. And I think LSU plans, or I would be shocked if they don't score, you know, somewhere in the low 30s at a bare minimum. So Alabama on the other side, conversely, is going to have to probably outscore LSU. And, you know, previously this has been a defensive matchup, but I think everybody thinks and is expecting it to be the first one to 50 wins.
It'll be a great game. We're talking to Hudson Mason. In addition to being a former starting quarterback of the Bulldogs, he's an analyst on the SEC Network. So how impressive has LSU been to you thus far? Are they the class now of the SEC this season?
Yeah, I think they are the biggest surprise of all of college football so far. I mean, I think Ed Orgeron is on his way. He's not there yet to being the coach of the year. I think he will sign, seal, and deliver that if he can beat Alabama. But I think the hires that he's made with Joe Brady, the addition and the improvement of Joe Burrow at the quarterback position, they're no longer just a defensive team. They're a complete team. So I think they've been the biggest surprise. I think Ohio State is the best team in the country, but I think LSU is the biggest surprise. And Alabama, LSU, and Ohio State are all right there. You know, LSU took over Alabama today in the new AP poll, but it's going to be an extraordinary game. You know, Tua had this injury last year, but the difference is last year was on his plant foot, and as a quarterback, you know, he's lefty, so you're talking about his front leg, which isn't as serious as your plant leg that you have to kind of plant and generate force, you know, and twerk to throw the ball down the field. But, you know, he's not going to be 100%. There's no doubt about that. So I wish we were getting Tua at 100% because I want to see both these teams at their best, both quarterbacks at their best. But I do think, you know, let's say he's 80 to 85%. You'd rather take 80% Tua, 85% Tua than Mac Jones at 100%. And that's not a knock necessarily on Mac. We know Tua is a once-in-a-lifetime type quarterback.
We're talking to Hudson Mason. He's part of the 680 The Fan lineup in Atlanta. You can hear him there. Okay, Justin Fields is lighting it up for Ohio State. Is there a feeling in Georgia that he's one that got away?
I do think there are some sour grapes, and I feel like I can say that because I do, like you mentioned, radio here in Atlanta, and so I feel like I've got a pretty good pulse on the fan base of Georgia fans. And, you know, I don't know if I would – one that got away. I think the way to describe it is, and how most Georgia fans feel, is it worked out the best way possible for both parties. Georgia got the quarterback that they were looking for in their system in Jake Fromm, and Justin Fields was able to kind of go find another home, and clearly it's been an even better fit. I always thought Justin Fields' skill set as a dual-threat quarterback was kind of a square peg in a round hole at Georgia. And, you know, transferring to Ohio State was a win-win situation for him. He's playing phenomenal. He's on the best team in the country. I mean, I don't think Ohio State has a flaw. The Fox game this week that called the game against Wisconsin, I thought they hit the nail on the head that really the only flaw of Ohio State right now is the backup quarterback position if Justin Fields was to go down. So they got the best player in the country and Young, the defensive end, they were right up
crazy there,
if not the best.
I know Young is now in the Heisman talk, you know, way up there at the top, 13.5 sacks in 8 games, which has been just incredible. The Big 12, speaking of not so incredible, had a really, really rough weekend. So TCU took down UT in good fashion, 37-27 with Ellinger's 4 interceptions. But more shocking was what in the world, Kansas State taking down OU in an embarrassing loss. What do you see can happen to OU? Is there any way for them to get to the Final Four?
I don't think they're like Georgia or Florida or some of these other one-loss teams and other conferences that control their own destiny. And by control their own destiny, I mean if you win out, you're in. I think Oklahoma is kind of one of those three teams. I would put Oregon and I put Utah into that category where they need a little help. I'm not for sure if a one-loss Big 12 champion in Oklahoma gets in. They may or may not. I just think right now it's a bit too premature to say that they will, so they need a little help. And so, you know, obviously I was rooting for Oklahoma to be one of the four teams because I just love the storylines potentially around, you know, Oklahoma and Alabama meeting up, one quarterback transfers to a new school, maybe even that quarterback winning the Heisman. I mean, just the amount of storylines that would have garnered attention if Alabama and Oklahoma would have played with Jalen Hurts would have been extremely fascinating. They're not out of it, but they're definitely going to need some help. I mean, if you're talking Big 12, you know, Baylor's still in the mix technically.
Matt Rhule has
that team rolling. So, you know, Minnesota and Penn State, two undefeated teams that aren't getting a ton of attention, that are still in the mix. So there's about nine teams I would say that are competing for four spots. And then that second tier teams is where Oklahoma falls into, you know, the Utahs, the Oregon, the one loss teams that I think probably need a little help to get in right now.
So November is going to be a big month to watch. Hudson, Michigan hands Notre Dame a 45-14 spanking this weekend. Does it say more about Michigan or about Notre Dame?
You know, I was watching that game, and it's like every other game, I swear, that every game I watched this weekend felt like it was in the pouring rain from college to pros. The hard part about it is it's pouring rain and, you know, you're trying to assess the teams in Notre Dame. And I know a lot of people are kind of like, you know, is it more about Michigan? Is it less about Notre Dame? I don't know. It's tough to tell. You would have liked to see those teams compete in you know, fair weather conditions. But, you know, Michigan shouldn't complain. They found a way to win. You know, I just saw I saw Ian Book and Notre Dame play against Georgia several weeks ago, and that wasn't the same team that I saw play against Michigan. I think Michigan's defense is the real deal, one of the best in the country. And I think Michigan offensively, you go back to last week against Penn State in the second half, they've been hitting their stride. And so they've needed that desperately, especially with Jim Harbaugh being an offensive-minded guy. That's kind of what they've struggled with, and the quarterback position is what they've struggled with there for several years in Ann Arbor. So, you know, I don't know. And I – you don't get paid in this industry to ride the fence, but it's just so tough to draw conclusions out of a monsoon of really who did what really well or who did bad really well. But, you know, credit Michigan for finding a way to win, because we all know their record versus AP top 10, top 15 teams, and it has been atrocious since Jim Harbaugh's there.
We're talking to Hudson Mason, former starting quarterback for the Bulldogs. Okay. We're watching the Dolphins here, and they're supposedly tanking for Tua. They do have the lead at the moment. But as we think about the first quarterback taken in next year's draft, is it Tua or is it Justin Herbert?
That's a great question, you know, and I think a lot of people, I know you guys are kind of middle America out there in Texas, but a lot of people here on the East Coast, pretty unfamiliar with Herbert because of the Pac-12 and them playing so late on the East Coast. I have gotten a chance, not as much as I would like to see him, but I have seen him play a couple games, saw him play against Auburn, and saw him play against Washington, and I think he's the real deal. I think what NFL scouts are looking for has changed a little bit with some of the smaller quarterbacks getting drafted. I think if you're an old-school general manager and you're looking for that Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, prototypical, big size, stature, all the intangibles, that's who Herbert is. If you're looking for a guy who may be a little smaller, like Tua, but is deadly, deadly accurate, and that is what it takes to survive, not just to get drafted high, but to have a 10, 15-year career, you have to be the 1% in the world that can put the ball on a dime consistently, and that's who Tua is. So I think Tua will go higher, but I think Herbert will still be a first-round pick, if not a top 10.
Very good. Hudson Mason, thank you so much for joining us.
All right, Dave and Carlos, take care.
When we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Dan Duquette, the former general manager of the Expos, Red Sox, and
Orioles.
This guy knows everything baseball, and we're going to ask him how this World Series will unfold. It'll be Dan Duquette when we return on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Well, joining us now here on the Progressive Insurance Guest Line is Dan Duquette. As you may recall, he's the former general manager of the Red Sox, Expos, and more recently the Baltimore Orioles. Dan, thanks for joining us here on SB Nation Radio.
Yeah, glad to be on. Glad to talk a little baseball in October.
Let's talk some baseball. I would love to start with the World Series, maybe a look back, and then we'll look ahead. We've played five games, and the home team has never won. It seems like an odd series in some way. What have you seen thus far between the Nationals and the Astros?
Well, I mean, they're both immensely talented teams. You can see the depth of the talent that both of them have. But I knew after Washington got off to a good start down there, I knew that Houston had way too much talent to not be heard from in this series, and they came roaring back. But, I was really impressed by the top-notch starting pitching.
Yep.
And, there's a lot of emphasis during the regular season on the bullpens, and you need a good bullpen to win. But if you got those horses in the starting pitching, that's how you can advance to the World Series, and that's been evident here. You saw how the Nats were hurt when Scherzer couldn't make a start last night, and how they got off to a great start when Scherzer and Strasburg pitched well down in Houston. And then when Urquidy and Garrett Cole did a good job for the Astros when they went to Washington, that really set the tone for those couple of wins there.
Yeah, Urquidy was the big win for me. I just didn't see that happening. I mean, he really was a standout as the rookie amidst all these big names.
Yeah, I mean, he's a Mexican pitcher, and Mexican pitchers are always great competitors, but he did something in that World Series that I don't think has been done by a rookie pitcher since Jim Palmer going back to 66 when he was part of that sweep of the Orioles over the Dodgers. So that gives you some context of how good his performance was. But he looked great, good pitchers, and good composure on the mound for the Astros.
All right, the series returns to Houston. A great matchup, Game 6, Verlander versus Strasburg. Do you think it'll get to Game 7?
I hope it gets to Game 7. Strasburg's had an excellent record in the postseason. Verlander has pitched way better in the regular season than he has in the postseason. So if they stay true to form, we'll see a Game 7. But you never know. I mean, the Astros, look at that infield they got. They got a number one pick there in Correa, number five pick in Bregman, and Altuve is a Hall of Famer, and their first baseman's been making some great plays for him. So, Houston could close it out at home, but I hope there's a Game 7. I've really enjoyed watching Rendon. What a terrific player he is, and what a great year he's had. And then this kid, Soto, that came up from the Dominican.
Oh, yeah.
He looks like he's a talent for the ages.
He certainly does. If it gets to Game 7, of course, there's a chance that Scherzer can come back and pitch in Game 7 for the Nationals if he gets healthy. But if not, it's going to look like a smorgasbord of pitchers, I guess, for the Nationals versus Greinke starting Game 7. What goes into a manager's mind at this moment with so much uncertainty about a Game 7?
Well, I mean, the Astros made that trade to pick up Greinke at the deadline.
Yep.
I think they got a really good pitcher there. And I think they were under the radar, and they swooped in at the end to make a nice acquisition. You know, I mean, Game 7, you know, that's an elimination game. That's a death match. That's all hands on deck. So you'll see some pitchers run in and out of there pretty quickly. I'd be surprised if Scherzer couldn't answer the bell for a Game 7 to help the Nats.
Yep.
Just the way he's been able to manage that injury over the course of the season. I know it's bothered him the other night, but I'm hopeful that he can manage it and pitch a good game for the Nats.
And we might see Garrett Cole come back and pitch an inning or two on, I guess, what would be about 2 days' rest. But, yes, I get it to be all hands on deck if it gets to a Game 7. So we're broadcasting out of Houston, Texas, and we've watched Jeff Luhnow build this Astros team into one of the top teams over the last few years. What's your observations of his job here in Houston?
Well, they've done a terrific job, and really I think the proof is in the pudding, but their development of the pitchers that they've acquired. They picked up Verlander and Cole in trades. They've been able to leverage the technology and a really good a pitching program to improve those guys and make their club better. Brent Strom, terrific breaking ball instructor, and he had some great training with the Dodgers. He's a top-notch pitching coach, and I'm really impressed with their manager, A.J. Hinch. He's really calm and cool, and he makes good decisions. He knows how to handle the pitchers with his catching background. And, you know, the whole organization's done a good job. Jim Crane's dedicated to winning, and Jeff sets the tone there. And they got some really good, dedicated baseball people.
It's interesting listening to you speak because it seems the Astros have done a better job taking pitchers from other teams and getting them righted or improving their performance than they have developing from within their own system. I mean, Verlander picked his game up when he came over. Even Wade Miley this year was a great surprise coming over and performed better during the course of this year. Coming up the pipeline, though, they haven't been able to develop as much. What do you think the key is when they bring over a pitcher from another team? How have they been able to elevate those pitchers' performance?
Well, what they do is they look at their repertoire and they try to improve their secondary pitches. And then they also use the technology, the ergonomic cameras, to give the players immediate feedback in their field sessions. And I think that's been a real boost to helping them improve the pitching development of pitchers coming to them from other squads. I think they were out in the forefront of the technology, and they were able to leverage the technology more effectively to get more out of those top-notch pitchers that have pitched them to the World Series the past couple of years. And, you know, they deserve a lot of credit for that. You know, there's so much is just incremental improvements that you can make. But if your organization is dedicated to moving ahead and being competitive, you know, you got to be making these incremental advances. And Houston's certainly been able to do that. Now, you know, it's hard to be good at everything. So some clubs are really good at developing pitchers in the minors. Houston, I believe, will improve their development of their minor league pitchers. But right now they're doing a great job of developing the pitchers that they get in trades in the big leagues.
We're talking to Dan Duquette. He's the former GM of the Red Sox, Expos, and Orioles. Also notably a graduate of Amherst College, of which we shared notes earlier. Let's shift gears to the Boston area then. You are GM of the Red Sox. And today they officially announced their chief baseball officer, Chaim Bloom, coming over from the Rays. What do you think of that hire, and what does he mean for the Red Sox?
Well, I don't know Chaim that well. I dealt with some other people in the organization, but he comes to the Red Sox from another organization that's done a really good job on their pitching and being competitive year in and year out. The Tampa Bay clubs developed a nice pipeline, bringing kids through their system, pitchers and players, and getting the most out of them. And the, you know, John Henry, when he made the announcement, had some nice things to say about his new baseball officer, and he brought him on to get some of those efficiencies out of the Red Sox organization.
We're talking to Dan Duquette, former GM of the Red Sox. Back to the Red Sox. One of the mandates, I guess, that Bloom will have is to reduce payroll, and yet the expectations always are high in Boston. How does he manage that tension?
Well, you know, in Boston, there's a great passion by the fans.
Yep.
So he'll have a lot more resources than he had at his previous stop. And, you know, I'm sure he'll do a good job. There's a lot of ways you can invest your money and get some efficiencies out of it. But, you know, the Red Sox are blessed with a great fandom, and I'm sure Bloom will take a look at some of the things that he did well in Tampa and try to apply them to the major market in Boston.
Red Sox have so much money invested in Chris Sale and David Price at the top of the rotation. Can those guys get their careers back on track?
Well, you know, they've had a lot of innings, both those guys.
Yep.
They've had a lot of success. You know, I don't know where they are physically, but, you know, the Red Sox have a lot invested in them. And their season will hinge on them the next couple of years until the Red Sox can find some other pitchers. You know, it's hard to find great left-handed pitchers like Allen Price, and I would expect that they're not done, and they'll get some good service from the next couple of years.
Let's shift gears to the Mets. Their manager search continues. What do you think they need to find in their next manager?
Well, you know, I mean, New York's a tough market. You got the Yankees across town. They seem to have a good organization. They're good every year. And, you know, the Mets, if they can find a manager that can handle the pitching, which they have some good ones, and then, you know, be a good front man and communicate with the media and the fans, I think they've got the nucleus of having a pretty good ball club. And, you know, the East is competitive, but the Mets have certainly the pitching to be able to compete in the East. And if they can fill out their team and find a manager that can handle the staff, I think the Mets can be contenders again next year.
We're talking to Dan Duquette, former GM of the Red Sox, Expos, and Orioles. So let me ask you about the Dodgers. So excellent during the regular season, so disappointing in the postseason last couple of seasons. What do they need to do in the offseason to finish better? No one said we were going to. No one said we'd give you easy questions. No easy questions here, right?
It's hard to do better than what the Dodgers have done the last couple of years, because they've won more games in the National League than any other club other than the Nats, and the Dodgers won a couple of pennants. Now, I know that everybody is disappointed that they didn't win the World Series. You know, what can they do better? Well, win the World Series when they get there.
I guess.
But, I mean, the Dodgers got some excellent young players. They got some good position players. They brought a number of good players up to their minor league system to be the core of their current club. Their bullpen was a little bit thin this year, and that was exposed in the playoffs when the Nats came back from 3-1 in that decisive fifth game. They have had a very, very strong bullpen. Some of their pitching hasn't been up to par when they did get to the playoffs. So, you know, next time they get back there, I'm sure they'll have a little bit more pitching depth, and hopefully they'll have the pitchers they need to get over the hump. But having won the pennants consecutive years in a row, that's pretty good, but I know they're still looking for a championship. They haven't had a championship since Lasorda was there, right? I think it was 88.
Yep. Been too long.
Been a long time. That's the longest time in the history of that organization. But, you know, baseball is tough. A lot of teams trying to win, trying to do the same thing. And, you know, the major market clubs are not dominating like they did for a period there a few years ago.
No, indeed. Let me close with this question. Dan Duquette, general manager, three teams historically. Do you see yourself serving as GM again in Major League Baseball?
Well, I'm going to try to get back with a club in a leadership role. I've been able to turn around at some teams and make them competitive. I've not been able to be with a team to win a championship. We had a great team in Montreal in 94.
Yep.
And they weren't able to get to the championship. And then I left the Red Sox a good foundation of players that ended up winning in 04, but I wasn't there. And then we had a couple shots with the Orioles. We couldn't get over the hump. So I'd still like to be part of a championship team and be there to execute it to win the championship. So that's a goal of mine. I hope to be able to do it again soon.
Would love to see that for you. Thanks so much for joining us. That's Dan Duquette. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Okay, on the break, I got some very revealing information. Carla, you have become Jose's life coach. Is that right?
That's right. Because I'm older and a tad bit wiser. Only from experience.
A lot bit wiser.
And so she encouraged you to attend a hip-hop class, Jose. Not to be confused with a pole dancing class. There was no pole dancing.
No, not at all.
There was no twerking.
There are no accoutrements in there.
He definitely outdanced me.
Oh, of course she outdanced you. But you came back limping. I see you.
We had a twerkathon.
Yeah, a twerkathon. And it really wore you out. Sore muscles, the whole gig, right?
Right. I couldn't walk yesterday. I was really sore. Lucky for me, there was football on all day.
So what did your life coach tell you to do?
Put on some blue emu.
And Jose?
Blue
the
emu?
The result is?
I'm walking pretty fine today.
Isn't it the best stuff ever?
It is, and it doesn't stink.
It doesn't stink, and I'm telling you
Jose does not stink.
No, we are trying to defy the age barrier here. That's why I'm going to hip-hop. And if you smell like menthol, you gain 50 years. It's the worst. But this stuff, this is the bomb.
It's the best deep-penetrating cream. It takes what ails you and fixes it.
And no chill either. No chill, no burn. Just good-feeling muscles.
All right, Blue Emu, go get it.
You go, Jose. Hip-hop next week.
Jose will be back on the dance floor, as will you with Blue Emu.